Thanks for inviting me to the symposium. I want to tell you a little bit about the work that we've been doing over the last few years, working with some botanically derived insect repellents in a push-pull strategy. Now, Pickett described a push-pull strategy as one that uses repellents, attractants, anti-feedants, pheromones, in conjunction with a trap crop to manipulate the target pest and to achieve the management goals. Well, our management goals were to use push-pull concept in pasture fly management, particularly in organic dairy production systems. Now, if you go to the National Organic Standards Board and you look for parasiticides, you will find in there this regulation in reference to ivermectin, which is a very commonly used parasiticide in livestock production. It is prohibited in slaughter stock. It is allowed in emergency treatments of dairy and breeder stock when organic systems planned approved preventive maintenance does not prevent the infestation. So basically they're telling you, you can use it if your plan has failed. Also, it says milk or milk products from treated animals cannot be labeled as provided for in the subpart D. So you can't label your product as organic if you do treat those animals. And also, you cannot have the products of those animals go into the organic stream for 90 days following treatment. So that's a very important characteristic there. Well, what is ivermectin? Ivermectin has been labeled for horn fly control, and it's usually applied every 3 to 4 weeks as an anhelminthic. It is applied every 1 to 2 times a year as a best management practice. Cattle outside of the organic stream can be treated with ivermectin. I gained this knowledge by talking with a member of the Organic Materials Review Institute, and his specialty was in dairy production systems. So he said if there are animals on the farm that are not organic, that these animals can be treated as long as their products are not labeled as organic. Approximately, out of every dairy herd, approximately 50% of the dairy calf are going to be males. So basically, these animals could be used for trap crops. Using this method, they could not, though, come in contact with one another. That's a very important consideration. So using this method, we were looking to achieve horn fly control using a repellent and ivermectin treated trap animals. This is a horn fly. You can see here, this animal here, we would estimate that we're looking at probably about 900 to 1,000 flies on this animal. This is very common in eastern North Carolina. You saw David Orr's presentation earlier. This is the same farm. This just happens to be the animal side of the farm that I do most of my work on. In this case, these calves are held on pasture at the Center for Environmental Farming Systems in Goldsboro, North Carolina. It's a rotational grazing system where the calves are moved to fresh grass about every 48 to 72 hours under the typical regime there. We had 6 groups of 6 Holstein calves that were used in the study. Horn fly densities were counted, were determined by counting the numbers of flies on the entire animal from a distance of about 2 to 4 meters. Flies were counted on day 0, 2, 7, and 7 following each treatment. The estimates of horn fly populations for each pasture were pooled and the means all calculated. Cattle were corralled for treatment. We'd bunched them together. Once identified, the ivermectin animals were treated with a pistol type applicator and then they were released. The others were treated with a repellent using the clean applicator, and then those animals were released. A couple of years ago, we did a study where we were looking at trying to optimize our dose for repellents, and the repellent that we were looking at was is called geraniol. We used a 30% geraniol product. Repellent 1 was 60 cc's of geraniol per animal. Repellent 2 was 120 cc's of geraniol. Repellent 3 was 180. We had 2 ivermectin treatment groups and a control. This is the pasture setup that we had on these animals. You can see the control on the far, I guess that's your left, on the far left there. We had the first one was a repellent 1, the second one was the trap animals, followed by repellent 2, and then trap animals, and then repellent 3. So basically you can see how the flies would be pushed and pulled towards different groups of cattle as a result of these different treatments. This is our gives you a layout of some of our results here. One day following treatment, you can see on the control side, you see the five columns. Those five columns represent a 10-week portion of the study. Treatments were applied every 2 weeks, so that's so we've got five columns there. 60 cc's, you can see by day one that the fly population was greatly suppressed on those animals. And on out to 100 cc's, there were very few horn flies on those animals there. Day seven days later, our fly population is starting to come back a little bit. 60 cc's, we've got more flies appearing. At 120 and 180 cc's, the fly population is still significantly suppressed. And then on day 14, we've got, you can look at the 60 cc's, 120 cc's, and 180 cc's, that more flies have come back. Now this fundamentally is a pre-treatment count for day zero for the next go around in the regime that we had. So after these flies were counted on the animals, those animals were then treated again with the repellents and then put back into the stream. And this was how it continued over the entire 10-week period. Now this is the 10-week means overall, showing the differences in the mean numbers of flies for each of the control groups, or each of the treatment groups, and you can see the controls are nearly 400 flies per animal on average, and 60 cc's we're looking at a little better than 100 flies per animal, and at 120 and 180 they were very similar, they were not significantly different. As a result of this, we selected 120 cc's as our optimal dose for treatment of these animals with geraniol. So what is geraniol? Geraniol is a plant-derived monoterpene. There were some discussions of this earlier today in other symposia that were here in the at the meeting. It is derived from lemongrass. It's also commonly associated with geraniums and is often found in forage grasses of livestock in general, of cattle. It is recognized as an insect repellent or another arthropod repellent. There was a presentation at 135 in the room adjacent to us today in which they had described orbatted mites that were being that actually carried geraniol in their alarm pheromones, and that when they were attacked by beetles that they would release geraniol into the environment in order to keep the beetles from attacking them. Geraniol is also found in ants that are being that use it as a repellent for invading ants from other colonies, and they will spray it into the face of the invading ants in order to repel them and drive them off. So this is a very interesting compound. It's been around for quite some time and recognized as an insect repellent. In the case of humans and animals, it is a grass product. It is minimal risk. It is generally regarded as a safe product. Now, we've done this work over the years, and the question has always come back. Geraniol is a volatile chemical, and when you put it on the animals, you can smell it. And the question always comes back, does it turn up in the milk? Before we can get this approved in the organic systems, we need to find out for sure if it is detectable in bovine milk. And this was a study that I conducted with our colleagues in food science and in dairy and animal science. Mary Ann Drake is the director of the food science program detecting flavors in food products. Her grad student was Drew Watson, no relation to me. And Steve Washburn is the dairy coordinator for animal science, and he handles all of the dairy work in at Goldsboro. This is the study layout for this part of the discussion today. Again, we looked at the same doses that we had done before. We had a control group. 60 cc's of geraniol, 120 and 180 cc's. It was applied every 2 weeks over a 12-week period, so we've got 60 different treatments. The geraniol was applied to the animals, and we collected milk on day zero, and then 1, 3, 7, 10, and 13 days after the animals were treated. Then those animals were retreated, and then we went through that rotation again. Our goal was to find out if there was an immediate increase in geraniol flavors in the milk themselves, or if it was an accumulative effect, if over a 12-week time period you begin to see more and more geraniol turning up in the milk. So we did an analysis with solid phase micro extraction as well as GC mass spec, and we also did a descriptive analysis. This is what a dairy cow looks like after it's been treated with geraniol. You can see that oily sheen on her back. You can also see that she's just got an incredible abundance of horn flies on her. And that animal is pretty clean, and that's pretty indicative of what you see with geraniol treatment on horn flies. This is what the MS fragmentation pattern looks like when you look at geraniol. This is what we were looking for with our instrumentation. We also wanted to see if the presence of milk was detectable in, or the geraniol was detectable in the milk. That was determined by head space solid phase micro extraction with GC mass spec. The milk was analyzed for total solids, non-fat, and the percent fat by commercially available software system that's used in food science. The milk was prepared for SPEMI GCMS by adding 10 milliliters of milk, 1 microliter of 2-methyl-3-heptanone as an internal standard, as well as some salt. The milk was analyzed by SPEMI within 48 hours of collecting it. In addition to the experimental samples, we had 10 locally produced pasteurized commercial products. They were also analyzed to see if any geraniol was turning up in those as well. They were purchased at a grocery store. We did the orthonasal threshold. That was basically a sniff test in water, skim milk, and whole milk using an ascending force choice method. We had samples. They were prepared in deodorized water using threefold serial dilution of stock solution. We established a group best estimate threshold calculated for the water, skim milk, and whole milk. The limit of detection with the instrumentation was determined for geraniol using the headspace SPEMI process, and determined to optimize the signal to noise ratio to keep that as minimal as possible. We also did a descriptive analysis, which was a sensory profiling conducted in duplicate for geraniol treated milk using the spectrum method established and an established dairy lexicon. These are terms that they use to describe off flavors in milk. The milk was batch pasteurized prior to a taste panel. We had 12 volunteer students come in and taste the milk to see if it was present. It was interesting to see that in our detection, our instrumental analysis did not detect geraniol in any of the milk samples that we had. So it did not go systemic. So it didn't turn up in those animals. So we did not see that profile. Now in the sniff test that we did, it was added to water, and you can see that at 147 parts per billion, and in skim milk at 137 parts per billion, you could detect odors of geraniol in those products at that rate. But that's very, very low rates right there. You can see at whole milk, we needed significantly more geraniol and for it to be sniffed and detectable by the people on the panel at 332 parts per billion. So basically, it was very low, and it was hardly detectable at all by individuals when they smelled it. This is the descriptive analysis. This is the milk that had been pasteurized, and they were allowed to taste it. The lexicon that was described there describes the cooked, the sweet aroma, the sweet taste, astringency, saltiness in milk fat, or whether or not the milk was tasted grassy. And in this spider graph right here, that showed indicated that there was no significant differences in these products. They did say that some of the individuals did say that the milk tasted slightly salty, and that was the only thing that was indicated by the taste tests that were done by the panel. So fundamentally, geraniol, when applied topically to dairy cows, did not result in any detectable levels in the milk, either by the sensory panel or by descriptive analysis. It did not turn up in our GC mass spec analysis in the end, and so we could use that as a tool for identifying it. Also, the lack of detectable residues in milk allows geraniol to be considered as a promising natural insect repellent with potential application in organic dairy production. We have not gained that the ORMI review yet, and once we are able to apply for that, we may actually see geraniol and a push-pull strategy used for fly management. We did try this without having a trap animal, and we could not keep the flies off in time. As long as a trap animal group was there, we were able to manage the horn flies in that herd, but that trap animal is essential. Thank you. Yes.
With the comment that the previous speaker made about the likelihood in your mind that people were going to have to start managing insects because of just the, for the comfort of the animals,
right.
How is that going to affect your potential if you're basically sacrificing some animals to the flies?
Well, it was interesting when we. That's a very good question, and if your horn fly densities are incredibly high, those ivermectin-treated animals recognize that there's been a significant increase in the number of flies in their bodies immediately afterwards. But by the next day, all of those flies are gone. They're dead. And it was surprising to us to see how quickly those flies disappeared from the ivermectin-treated animals. So that discomfort is a consideration if you've got incredibly high horn fly density. But if you started the treatments early, started it fairly early in the season, you probably would not see significant fly numbers that would impact those animals. Yeah, Roger.
Wes, you used ivermectin in your trap.
Yes.
But if those animals aren't going into the organic chain, why stay with ivermectin? Why not use a cheaper, more effective product?
Well, that's a good question too. You could use a cheaper, more effective product. My concern was the cheapest thing that we could have gone to would have been probably a pyrethroid, and there's been speculation for a long time that pyrethroids themselves were repellent and that there's some sort of flushing behavior, and so we were afraid that if we did use a pyrethroid that that the flies may not wish to go to them either, and therefore would dilute the impact. Tim. I'm sorry, say that again. Quit mumbling.
Yeah, I think the pyrethroid repellency issue had been put to bed a number of years ago.
It
wasn't based on that.
No, maybe so. That was my rationale, and so it that's
I
why
don't
I went.
Remember if it was.
Yeah.
I don't
okay.
But there are
sure. Sure, there are. Well, you could use permethrin, which is already organically approved. Oh, pyrethrum, excuse me.
I'm thinking some of the OPs. Is that heretical?
You probably could use some OPs. As long as those animals aren't going into the organic stream, you're okay. Yes? Yes, you can have them on the farm. That was a major question that I had for the representative from ORMI, was that, you know, I had always been under the impression that you could not have any insecticide-treated animals on the farm, and he said that is not true, not in dairy. You can have treated animals on the farm. And I think that's primarily because if there's an infected animal, if you've got an animal that's sick on the farm and it has to be treated, then that would fundamentally mean you'd have to sell that cow. And that is a real risk to an economic loss to a dairy producer. So I think there is that clause built into that system saying that you can't have those animals on the farm. They can't commingle. You have to have a special place for them. And so that they don't come in contact with one another, but you can have them on the farm. Anything else? Thank you.